Welcome to Nexus 818 Podcast, a reflective platform for connecting past successes with future progress in the African-American community. I'm your host, Doc JC. This episode of Nexus 818 Podcast features the Montford Point Marines. After 144 years of exclusion due to segregation, approximately 20,000 African-American men were admitted to the Marine Corps. For their valiant service to our nation, these Marines were awarded the Congressional Gold Medal in November of 2011. If you're tuning into the podcast for the very first time, I encourage you to check out episode 27 from October the 4th of 2023 to learn about the background of the Montford Point Marines. I am pleased to welcome to episode 35 the descendants of Corporal Granville Jack Alexander Jr., who served in the Montford Point Marines. My guests tonight are Paul Alexander and Joyce Richardson, nephew and niece of Corporal Granville Jack Alexander Jr. Welcome, Paul and Joyce.
Greetings.
Hello. Good evening.
So I always like to start with some interesting facts about the soldier or the soldier's family. And sometimes those facts can be kind of solemn. And that's going to be the case with at least one of the facts today. First, Jack was an expert swimmer and made that a family tradition. Sadly, however, Jack, his wife Mary, two young sons perished during Hurricane Camille in 1969. Jack died swimming while trying to save his family. With no living offsprings, we are blessed tonight to have his nephew and niece to share his life and legacy. So let's talk about Granville Jack Alexander. He was born in New Orleans in 1909. Do you know how old he was when he enlisted?
He was 39.
39?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. That was
my cousin says it like she was there. Come on. We weren't even born.
He's speaking with authority nonetheless, right?
Hey, speaking with authority. That's it.
So what was he doing at the time of enlistment?
He was a postal carrier. Mail carrier.
Did you have any sense? I don't know if you got to talk to him. Do you have any sense either from him directly or family lore about why he decided to enlist? Certainly at age 39.
No, I don't.
Yeah, nor do I. Obviously, I think he had, the desire to serve his country and so forth that most servicemen have, but don't really know exactly why. No.
Yeah, I normally ask how the parents of the soldier reacted to the enlistment, but I don't think that's, you probably don't know the answer to that question because it's a couple of generations out. And, it was a very difficult time for African-Americans in the 40s. And it said that Black soldiers had to fight a two-front battle, a victory over enemies without and victory over our enemies at home. So it was an act of valor to enlist under those circumstances. What do you think made him special?
What comes to mind is what I've referenced all along, his tenacity. I got to know him as a young nephew. You know, I was probably 10 or 11, perhaps, the last time I saw him. Because, you know, my family lived in New York. His brother was my father, lived in New York, but we would go down every two or three years to visit with him in New Orleans. And what I absolutely recall unmistakably is the kind of command that he had when he entered a room. And it wasn't an obnoxious, strong-armed kind of, you know, abrasive command. He just had an aura. When he entered a room, you know, people normally kind of stopped and looked at him and kind of deferred to him. That stayed with me. It continues to be with me today. So, and very likely because my father was his much younger brother, because my father was born 13, you know, or 12 or 13 years after he was. Mm-hmm. And he was the youngest of the siblings, and Jack was the eldest of the siblings. And so I think there was a fair amount of deference being paid by my dad to his older brother, even as we came to visit. But he did have the ability to have the command of a room. I will definitely say that.
So was it more a matter of style, or did he have an imposing presence, or some kind of combination of the two?
Nothing imposing in my view. It was just style.
Okay.
It wasn't like you felt like you were forced to listen to him. You just felt like you should because that was his style.
Now, was Jack is Jack a nickname or a middle name?
I think it's a nickname.
Okay. That's why it
Yeah.
always shows up in quotes. Okay. All right.
And I don't know where it
Candidly,
I
came
didn't know
from.
what Granville. I didn't know what Granville was until much later. I always knew it was Jack.
Uncle Jack, right?
Yep,
Always
Uncle
Uncle
Jack.
Jack. Yeah.
Okay. So I know that Jack was a corporal. You know what his specialty was in the Marines?
I don't.
I did not. Again, there's some reference in the research that was done, around logistics and so forth. But did I personally know it? No, I did not.
Okay, I'm just curious as to what type of work he did in the Marines. I'm interested in any stories he shared about his time in the service or any adventures, scary or funny memories, any stories?
I don't have any stories of him when he was in the Marines. Basically, all I know about Uncle Jack was that in my mind he was a big man. And maybe because that's because I was young. I guess I was about 11 or 12 when we went down to visit him for the last time. And like Paul said, he did have a presence, but it was a gentle presence. You were very respectful to him, but he was a very kind man, and he liked to joke around, but in a different way. Like Uncle Preston was forever telling jokes and cracking up. Like he was the comedian, in the family. Everybody loved Uncle Preston because he told the jokes. And like I said before, my brother is still trying to carry on those jokes to this day. And they're not funny, but we all laugh because they all remind us of Uncle Preston. And then Uncle Jack, he didn't joke in that way, but he did fool around and play with you and joke with you, but not in the same way.
Yeah, I'll echo everything that Joyce said. I mean, he was, very dedicated to his sons and his wife, obviously, our cousins. I guess as I look back on it, ironically, he really never spoke about his time in the Marines, in my presence at all, other than to joke with my dad periodically about the service, because my dad was in the Army, and Uncle Jack was in the Marines. And I've mentioned this before. He used to say to my father, who was in the medical corps, in the Marines, he's and in the Army rather, he would say, "Okay, you were in the Army, but I was an MP Marine." And as a kid, I thought that was he was a Marine MP. And I remember saying to myself, "So you pulled soldiers out of bars if they got out alive? Big deal. What's you were a Marine MP? Oh, you can't go around in a Jeep. How nice." I really never knew. For decades, I thought he was a Marine MP, and it wasn't until Joyce got in touch with me, and then I spoke with Valerie, that I realized that my Uncle Jack wasn't a Marine MP; he was an MP Marine, and
Gotcha.
that's really what he was saying to my father. It was like you joined a branch of the service that pretty much had made a commitment to integrate and to look upon soldiers as relative equals, even though it was in the 1940s or whatever, and obviously. Uncle Jack had a different experience when he joined the service, and that's kind of what he was trying to say.
Okay. I'd like to hear more about what he did when he completed his military service. Education, career, community activism. I understand he was quite involved in the community.
Oh yeah, he like I said, he was a letter carrier, and he was the type that knew everybody on his route, because he just. It seems like he knew everybody in New Orleans. They said when he had his the funeral is that at that time it was the largest that there had been in the city of New Orleans, because he was so involved in civic events. His work is just his life. And then my aunt, she was also involved in a lot of civic events. She was a dean of women at Dillard University, so they were both a very, I want to say a very educated. How can I say? They weren't
If I
affluent, but they,
if I
go
could
ahead.
jump in, if I could jump in, it's almost like the term that Joyce, you and I heard a lot is current, which is the power couple thing. Well, to
Right.
me, My Uncle Jack and my Uncle Mary, they were a power couple. I mean, people didn't understand the term at the time, but they certainly met the definition. They were involved in civic affairs to the maximum. They were well respected in each of their separate categories. It wasn't like one was deferred to the other as their sort of deputy in separate arenas. Whether it was the Postal Service leadership or in higher education with my aunt, they both had a profound effect on their respective work environments, which met the definition even in the 1950s of a power couple.
Right. He was in the New Orleans Autocrats Social and Pleasure Club. He was let's see what else. He was definitely in the NAACP. He was involved in that. And several other, he was a Mason and several other organizations. He was also involved in his church, civic affairs.
Okay.
I would say when I think back in terms of maybe getting a little ahead of myself, but I was thinking about my own career choices. I made a commitment as a volunteer only because that's what I saw my uncle and my dad doing. And I became a volunteer, medic in, through the fire department in my communities for 35 years. I went through all the training, got all the certifications that people that were paid to do it received. But I did it as a volunteer because volunteerism was something that I saw from the age of vision, and for the bulk of my life.
Was Jack able to take advantage of the GI Bill? And if so, how did you know how to use it? Some people, many people use it to go back to go to college and or buy a home. Have any?
I don't know that.
No idea. No idea.
Okay, man.
I think a lot of it had to do with the fact that, Joyce and I were in polarized different parts of the East Coast and West Coast, and he was kind of in the middle. So
Right,
we didn't see
right.
a lot of the day-to-day activity.
So do
But
you, and again, this is maybe one of those that because his sons died so young, and you would, and your niece and nephew, you might not know, but do you recall any life lessons he learned through his time in the service that he passed on to the family that again, they could be reflected through his community service? I think you mentioned his tenacity and his perseverance, and I don't know whether those. It could have come from the service or not. They could have, I don't know. So I was just curious if there any particular any values or traditions that in the family that a consequence of him serving in the Marines.
I don't know if it was had anything with to do with him being in the Marines, but his integrity, I think that's could be just an Alexander gene, because both of our parents, they believed in that. So I can't say he received that in the Marines. I think, like I said, I think that could have just been an Alexander gene or something he passed on to some of the Marines.
Yeah, it was
And my
probably the
my
other way.
cousin, well, yeah,
So,
because I mean,
yeah.
he was a fully formed and grown human being when he went in,
Exactly.
unlike
Exactly.
most of the soldiers who went in when they were still developing, they were youngsters.
Right. So I'm
So,
sure he taught them quite a bit.
right,
Yeah.
it's
And there
important.
was no question about, and again, this is true of his siblings, my aunt Zenobia, Joyce's mom, and my own father, Preston. I mean, if there was a common thread that we saw, it was their focus on, the belief in God and the belief in family,
That's
and
right.
the respect for the family. I mean, that if there's a huge common thread that ran through every part of my experience with any of the siblings from, the generation ahead of us, that came through loud and clear.
Okay. I want to segue and want to talk about you and your family. So Jack was the oldest of five. And see, your father was Preston, Paul, and Zenobia is your mother.
Yes,
George, okay. I'm interested in hearing about them, the backgrounds. Now, let me just start with asking, Paul, you said your dad was in the medical corps in the army in World War II?
Yes, my dad was a physical therapist
Okay.
and an athletic trainer. I mean, that was he was always involved in healthcare from when I could begin to pay attention to what my dad was actually doing. And what was fascinating about him, back to that whole tenacity thing that Joyce and I saw in this generation, was my dad worked for the New York City Health and Hospitals Corporation for 30 years. And he decided that it made sense for him to start a business and to start a medical supply company. And I can remember my mother, with respectfully saying, "Hey, listen, you can retire. You've worked hard. Maybe you should try to not do that." And he, probably much like Jack, in his own way, my dad decided to start, Alexander's Surgical Supply in New York City, and he became the first black owned, medical surgical supply co company in New York City. And he started that company and it ran for 25 years. And, that was despite all the challenges and people saying, "Ah, don't bother." I mean, he identified a site a half block from a teaching hospital, which was the perfect site for him to have a business, and the business flourished. And it was just one of those, as Joyce said, Alexander traits where, like Jack, my father had something in mind and he wouldn't let anything distract him. He made it work.
Okay. That's right.
So, Joyce, tell me about your mom, Zenobia.
My mother, she was a stay-at-home mom for the most part, but she also was an LVN. She was the youngest daughter. They called her Noti, and that's what she was known by her siblings. She was Noti because Zenobia Noti. She loved it. I mean, she was on the phone with her brothers and sisters all the time. Like my Uncle Jack is in New Orleans. They would talk all the time, Uncle Preston all the time. And they would seems like Uncle Jack and Uncle Preston would come out like every other year. One year one would come, the next year the other would come, because my grandmother was living out here. And so they would come and see her grandmother. And then I had one other aunt that was here, two other aunts, and one passed. And so the family was it was a well it was a close family. Because it's like where the grandmother was, everybody came there, and then she also had another brother. Well, he's a foster brother, Uncle Bill, and they would all come and visit,
So, are your parents still alive, or they're both
No, they
deceased?
weren't. No, they're both deceased.
Okay,
Yeah.
so then there was other than Uncle Bill, who was a foster brother. Tell me about the other three siblings.
There was an Osby. She was a nurse. She lived in California. I think she was one of the first to come out here. Well, there was Aunt Sis. She was the oldest. She was right under Uncle Jack. So she came to California. And then I think my grandmother came next, or either vice versa. And then my Aunt Osby came, and then my mother came last. Yeah, but Aunt Sis and Aunt Osby, they were both nurses.
Okay. All right.
So they're all like in the
There's a,
helping
that, that's
profession,
what I was
in the
going to say
medical
that, well, a
profession.
strong medical, backgrounds too. So, Paul, you are a Fairleigh Dickinson University alum, and you've had
Yes.
a multifaceted career in corporate America, healthcare, and higher education. Tell me about your background.
Let's see. It I guess I'll start with the part that I'm not particularly proud of, but nevertheless was part of my character. I was a pretty good student in school and ended up getting into the Fairleigh Dickinson University engineering program because my grades were pretty good. Now, unfortunately, when I graduated high school, I just turned 17. And as I can look back on this now, because I spent a semester in engineering school before I failed out and ended up into other programs, I can look back on that and I could say, I had all the intellect, but none of the maturity. And that was my problem, because I went away to school for the first time, living in the dorms, and I, made really horrible choices in terms of socializing and so forth. And, engineering didn't last very long. But ultimately,
Yes, you and I think are contemporaries and both went to school at college at young ages. and had to learn that, you had these schedules, these 8 a.m. classes. Well, I can do that. In high school, I was up. But the difference was in high school, your parent was the one making sure you got there. And when you go to college, it's like,
Exactly.
there's nobody
That's
there.
exactly right. And
Right.
plus, the big myth was, you get this concept of marking periods, and it's like, okay, I'll pick it up the next marking period. Guess what? In college, there are no marking periods. Nobody ever said that. But that was the hard lesson I learned. It's like, dude, at the end of the semester, the book's closed. That's it. And I had to learn that lesson in painful ways. Needless to say, my father was not impressed with my first semester GPA that we will simply say was south of 1.0. I'll just leave it at that. I was inspired to do better, and ultimately, I had to make up all the credits to graduate on time, and ended up making Dean's List my last 3 semesters, taking 20 credits each time just to get out on time. So the maturity finally kicked in, I guess, and I was able to get done. From there, I took a job briefly as a bank auditor, and then I went back and took the job in admissions at Fairleigh Dickinson and became the director of admissions there for 5 years. And then I left higher education and took a job at Citibank in New York City, and spent 12 years at Citibank in labor relations positions in New York City. From there, I actually went into the business with my father. He needed some assistance with the medical supply company, and I left Citibank and joined him in with the business. And then ultimately, it really wasn't something I wanted to do with my life, and I went back into corporate America with Seagram. Spent some time with them overseas, and then with Pitney Bowes, and spent more time with Pitney Bowes domestically and overseas, and that was my labor relations career. And I went back into higher education to run labor relations for Columbia University Medical Center. And then, moved up to New England and took on labor relations assignments up here. So that's the snapshot. While doing that, of course, prior to moving to Massachusetts, I did the volunteer emergency medical technician work with the rescue squad. And so I was running around, in the middle of the night when the alarms went off, cutting people out of cars and going to fires and that type of thing. And that sort of spirit of doing that, as I said earlier, probably came from my upbringing when I could see what my dad and my Uncle Jack were doing. So the healthcare piece stayed with me as a medic for the 35 years that I did that work as a volunteer.
Okay. Now you retired now?
I am retired now from the traditional working, although I'm still a basic life support instructor. I have a separate business where I still certify people in CPR. So I work with companies that want their employees to be trained, certified first responders. And so I still do that.
Okay. So Joyce, you are a Loma Linda University graduate with an extensive background in social services.
Yes, and my career is quite boring compared to Paul's.
Hardly.
Well, I'm sure you have something interesting to say.
No, I worked in social services for over 35 years, and I started off as an eligibility worker. I worked as a supervisor, and then moved from there to a program manager. I worked in adult and aging. I've worked in adoptions, foster care, economic benefits, so the whole gamut. And I really enjoyed it because I enjoy working with people, And once again, it's a helping profession.
Okay.
The
Thank
common theme in the Alexander gene. Yep.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, do you all have siblings?
Yes, I have two brothers.
Okay.
And I had an older sister who passed. So yes.
Okay. So I want to talk a little bit about legacy and influence. Jack, as you acknowledged earlier, is said to have had a commanding presence. He spent his post-military life actively involved with the Marines in the New Orleans area. I'm wondering how your uncle's experiences influenced and shaped your life and your decisions to do. I know it's one step removed being a nephew or a niece versus being a son or a daughter, but I'm just curious as to whether or not you fueling the influence, particularly since he was the oldest. They tend to have more impact.
I guess, my dad was in college was a track and basketball player. So he was an athlete. For some whatever reason, neither one of those sports really appealed to me. But I was fascinated by my uncle as a swimmer. And so, that's what I became. In high school, I was, one of the few African Americans on the swim team. You could pick my picture out of the high school yearbook quite easily. I have to think subliminally now that I know so much about my Uncle Jack, I just think I might have just been fascinated by his ability as a swimmer, and I took that on, and of course I passed that along to my two sons who had no alternative but to be swimmers themselves. Not that I put a gun to their head or anything, but yeah, that's what I insisted they learn because I thought it was a useful life skill. And they took on, and my younger son became a swimming coach and that sort of thing. And so I think a lot of that kind of goes back to Jack.
Joyce?
Yeah, and Uncle Jack, I remember my mother telling, a few stories about him, that he was like the protector because he was the big brother, and he wouldn't let anybody or anyone harm any of his siblings, especially my mother. And I remember one story where she was in the bus, and I guess, during that time, that's when there was a segregation. They tried to put her off the bus, and because I guess where she was sitting or not sitting or doing what she was supposed to be doing, and he stood up. It's like, no, you're not going to do this to my sister. And they both ended up getting off the bus, but it was almost like a ruckus there. So when I hear these stories about other people, it's like, oh, my uncle and aunt, they and mother and aunts, they also fought. They weren't during that time. They weren't going to let anybody take advantage of them, no matter what. And I remember another story. My uncle was, I think it was the Autocrat Club. I don't remember exactly the name of it, because my uncle was dark skinned. And during that time, if you were light with straight hair, you could be accepted. Or if you were dark with real curly hair, you could be accepted. But he really wasn't either one of those. He didn't have the curly hair, and they weren't going to allow him to be in the club. But he said, no, this is not going to happen. And he fought his way, and he became a member of that club. And in New Orleans, there was a lot of that segregation, just, I mean, among each other, among your friends. I mean, you could be black and it doesn't matter, you're still segregated. If you're too light, if you're too dark, there was still all this division among them. And I remember hearing stories about that, and Uncle Jack really fought against that.
The whole issue of colorism has been with us for a long time in the community.
It was a big thing. It seemed like, especially in the South, especially in New Orleans, it was.
Well, yeah, back in Philadelphia wasn't much different from that back in the day. So, yeah. So, how old was Jack when he passed?
I believe he was about 60, I think.
Yeah, it was the storm was
Yeah,
in
he was 60.
1969.
Right.
Yeah, so
He was 60.
I knew that was kind of a t talk about that fateful couple of days, as you recall the stories.
So that was a really, really bad time in our family. During that time, my father was also very sick. And so when my mother got that news, it was just like, it practically tore her up. Because the story that we heard is that Uncle Jack went down to, he heard about the hurricane. He was in New Orleans. My aunt and cousins, they were in Passe Christiane. He heard about it. He went out there to rescue them. And like we said before, he was an expert swimmer. And so, but he died trying to save them. When they found their bodies, he was in a tree with my cousins tied around him.
Wow.
It was, I mean, can you imagine that?
No.
The whole family was wiped out. All of them
Yeah,
gone, just like that.
they said there was something like it might have been a 30-foot, 25 to 30-foot storm surge. Now that it appears that Uncle Jack tried to avoid by climbing a tree. But with hurricane winds over 100 miles an hour, I mean, that seems to be the profile of Hurricane Camille. Three digit winds and 25 to 30 foot storm surges. He just never had a chance. None of them did.
So past Christian, I think that was a resort. Is that correct? On vacation?
It was a they had a vacation home, right?
Yeah, the way I heard it, correct me if you've heard differently, Joyce, but back then they didn't have the most scientific way of plotting storms. Not that anybody's any good at it now, but they were far less skilled at it then. And the belief at the time, as I heard it, was that there was a strong belief that the storm was coming to New Orleans. And so that was one of the reasons why, I believe my uncle might have sent, his wife and his sons to Passe Christian. And then there was a point when the storm took a turn. And I believe at that point, that's when my uncle realized, wait a minute, they're in the wrong place. I better get there. And so ultimately, as I understood it, Camille never really hit New Orleans, but it just about destroyed Passe Christian, and it was too late for them to make any adjustments.
Now, is he interred in a veteran cemetery or a family cemetery?
No, it's not a family cemetery.
So
And I don't even think it's a veteran cemetery.
no, it's not. I mean,
No, that's usually yes. A whole family is not usually buried in a veteran cemetery. No. It's usually a veteran and a veteran spouse, but not usually the
I'm willing to go out on a limb.
I'm gonna retract that because I had a both my parents served in the service in the army, different wars, and so they have plots at Arlington, but had a baby sister to die at age at 2 months old while my father was in the military, and so she is buried beneath him at Arlington. So there are occasions when when you have young children, there are occasions when that you can get buried at the military cemeteries. So I'm sorry, but you
I
began ready to.
wonder. I wonder how much recognition, even in as late as 1969, my uncle's service status as a Marine was really a part of what was done for him. My guess is, there probably wasn't that much awareness and proper respect for him at the time.
Which kind of is a segue to my next question. It was a significant honor for Jack to receive the Congressional Gold Medal. What was your reaction and the reaction of your family when you found out?
Wow, I was amazed. But first of all, I didn't even know what Montfort Point Marine, what that meant. I didn't know anything about it, until Mallory contacted us and we got involved with it. And to find out that this figure, this man that you know is receiving this honor, and in your heart, you should receive it, right? Just because of the type of person that he is. It was just amazing. And the fact that finally he received some credit for what he had done. And not just him, but all the Montfort Point Marines. And as you know, when I think about that, we were talking about what type of a person he was. He obviously was a model, a model Marine. He believed in what he was doing in the fight. And also when he came back home, he believed in getting this organization started in New Orleans, the chapter, because he was one of the he was one of the leaders in getting the chapter in New Orleans started.
This
And
is
because of
a chapter of Marines.
the chapter, the
Yes.
Montfort Point Marines, there are different chapters in different cities in New Orleans. There's a chapter. And the chapter that he has is it's the first one named after a person. They said, after the Granville Alexander chapter, they didn't have any chapters named after a person. They were all numbers, like number 1, 2, 10, or whatever. But because of who he was and how he had started to establish that chapter, that was an honor that they gave him. They named it after him.
When did you get the Congressional Gold Medal? That was pretty recently, wasn't it? Did
Oh
you?
yeah, it was what, November 11th.
Okay, it was
Yeah, Veterans Day weekend. Right.
just this weekend. I couldn't get down. I told Mallory I was gonna try to get down for that event, but I couldn't make that one.
And not only were there medals, but there were all the different certificates, how they, that he received because of, who he was.
So
It
then
was
who
Oh, there were proclamations from the city. A Congress, yeah,
So,
it was quite.
now who got to keep all that memorabilia in your family?
It's
We
distributed
share.
between the three of us.
Okay, all right.
Yeah. Yeah.
All
We
right.
share. We share. We'll pass things around. Yeah.
Okay, all right. So please share any reflections you have about what your uncle's life and legacy mean to you and your family.
I guess it's tricky when you have all these things that you know about, a relative, but you just don't have the lines between all the dots until much later in life. I guess that's my takeaway. I had this knowledge of a commanding presence. I had this knowledge of a man who was tenacious and obviously was the eldest of the siblings that the younger siblings like my dad deferred to. Not in a sort of obnoxious way or a depressive way. It was just like, yeah, it's Jack, Hey, Jack, what do you think? And so I had all these things, going on, but I really didn't understand, what the why was and how proud he was and how tenacious he was and what that tenacity really did for his country as well as for the family. I didn't have any of that information until 8 months ago. And so that's the kind of, I wish I'd known this before. And if I'd known this before, then I would have sat at his knee. There was one point, George remembers, and we were in New Orleans and they said, yeah, you stand on the shoulders of these heroes. And I was like, no. I don't believe for a moment that we stand on the shoulders. We sit at their feet, And I really wish I had the opportunity to literally sit at Jack's feet and say, tell me what you went through. Tell me why that's important for me to know. And tell me what you wish I would take away from your experience, Jack. But I never had that chance. None of us ever had that chance.
It's funny. My mother did talk a lot about her experiences in the 6888 Battalion, the other award, Congressional Gold Medal winner. So she did talk about those experiences, but it wasn't until after she got the Congressional Gold Medal, of course she's deceased, that my sister said to me, she said, "Hey, all those boxes you brought up from down south, from the family home when we sold it. Go through there and see if there's any of my mother and mama stuff in there from the 6888." So it wasn't until I got in to the boxes that you see this whole different you because you know your parents as adults. By the time you meet them, they are grown-ups for most people. They're grown-ups. And you don't really think about, they were young and vibrant once, and they were teenagers and made frivolous decisions. And so being able to go back and look through the boxes and see pictures dressed up, and out socially with people. And I was my daughter was home looking through some of the materials with me. And one of the pictures was my mother when she was in Europe riding a bicycle. We all said, we never knew grandma knew how mom knew how to ride a bike. But we remarked, it's like, we wish now that we see these things, that there's so many questions. As much as she talked, there's so many questions we'd still like to be able to ask. And so it's kind of one of the lessons for young people is talk to your elders, ask them all the questions, listen when they tell you things, because one day they might be talking about connecting those dots. One day those dots might all connect for you and you have an aha moment.
Right.
And so that's what I tell the young people, ask the questions. You take the time and listen.
Yeah. Because even the time that I spent with Uncle Jack, I guess the longest was when my grandmother, she wanted to see her children before she died, and she wanted to go to their home. So I was able to go with her, and we took the train and we visited Uncle Jack we were there for a couple of weeks, and he would just take me around and visiting people, and you don't even think about who they are or anything like that. I made some friends there because he made sure that I socialized with the kids on the block and went to not clams. We went to the beach and they would, what are those? I guess it was clams or shrimp or whatever that they would be cracking open and eating, and you just see him just having a good time
Probably
with
clams.
us. Clams,
Yeah.
yeah. And
Clams,
but
oysters.
never thinking about him what he did before as a Marine, or like Paul was saying, never. It was just a fun time. It wasn't any time to think about, I wonder what his life, what kind of effect it will have on me in the future. Not knowing anything.
Yeah.
It's just, all we saw was the love and the fun.
Yep.
You know,
And the respect. Yeah.
love, fun, and respect. That's what we saw.
So I have just one more question as we wrap up tonight. What lessons from his life story can you share to inspire young African Americans to embrace fear as opportunity so they can shatter those glass ceilings and be their best selves? I mean,
I would say it's it's a lesson from my Uncle Jack as well as my dad. It's kind of like what I saw. It's like if you have something that you want to do, my Uncle Jack wanted to be a Marine. That meant so much to him that he didn't care what it took. He just became what he wanted to be, and that was a U.S. Marine. Even though now we look back, and that was horrible. It's a horrible blemish on the military history of this country, what they put those black recruits through just to try to get them to be discouraged from joining the Marines. Didn't matter to my Uncle Jack. He wanted to be a Marine, And it's like my dad wanted to have a medical supply company. He wanted to have a black-owned medical supply company in New York City. And it didn't matter what anybody else really thought. He was gonna do that no matter what it took, And man, that tenacity, it's just head shaking when you think about, wow, these were two people in the earlier generation. And Zenobia, in terms of raising the family, I don't want to turn a blind eye at all to the person that stayed at home and made sure the family grew up the right way, And so Zenobia was as much a part of that accomplishment and tenacity as Jack or Preston. But it's like, when I say to my kids now, it's like, hey, if your goal is the right goal and it's something you want to do, don't let anything stop you. Know that I'm here to support you. Know that I'm here to help you, but don't change the goal. If that's where you want to go, I'm going to help you get there. That's the takeaway for me.
And basically that's what I was going to say. Don't let anybody stop you from what you want to do, because that's what we saw. Don't let anybody stop you or discourage you, because people will try to do that. They'll try to discourage you. They'll try to tell you that you're not good enough, that you don't have the grades for it, that you can't do it. But don't let anybody stop you from doing that. You go ahead and persevere, because with God by your side, you can do anything. And
Absolutely.
that's what they believed, and that's what they passed on to us.
And that's what we pass on. That's right.
Well, Joyce and Paul, I want to thank you so much for joining us tonight and for sharing your family story. I'm very, very grateful.
Well, thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you for the opportunity too. And I'll leave you with one, back to the joke thing. Just this whole thing about my father, the jokester. It's like, the one thing that I wish the joke that I've heard that I think sounds just like my dad is the story of a father, a son turning to his father, and he says to his father, Dad, we like setting fires. Are we pyromaniacs? And his father says, Yes, we are, son. That's it. That's the Alexander humor. There you go.
Thank you guys for joining me, and have a blessed new year.
All right. Thank
Likewise.
you. All
Take
right. Take
care.
care.
To my audience, thank you for listening to Nexus 818 Podcast. I hope you enjoyed our show. If you have questions or topics you'd like to discuss, or you'd like to be a guest on the show, please email the show at nextus818podcast@gmail.com. That's nextus818podcast@gmail.com. I like to end each show with a favorite reflection. Tonight I'll share a quote from hopefaithandlove.com. Always pray to have eyes to see the best in people, a heart that forgives the worst, a mind that forgets the bad, and a soul that never loses faith in God. See you for our next show on Wednesday, February the 21st at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. You can catch the show on Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, Audible, Google Podcasts, New York City Podcast Network, and Spotify for Podcasters.